Friday night playing Russian roulette with you, but not with a second-hand Saturday night special. Nah, downtown plays Russian roulette with a brand new SJPD revolver. One bullet for injustice, one bullet for intolerance, and one bullet for the self-hating sellout Latino capulero that will never bust enough Mexicans, harass enough Chicanos, or beat the shit out of enough cholos to feel equal to his Caucasian counterparts. You see, downtown when you're brown, Officer Lopez is hunting down Chicanos like the Terminator, hoping in vain that one day he may be able to wake up and scrub the brown out of downtown, or at the very least, out of his own skin. Downtown! Is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out Impalas and cherried out many drugs, as the cat calls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara Street, and beautiful Latinos strut by on 16 in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean, because SJPD will pull you over for being downtown and brown, and for no other reason, and you will find yourself on the corner of 27th and Santa Clara at a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by four police cruisers, while two bigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a third one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on cops, where they tell you to spread your legs, put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pat you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you, oh shit, look out downtown, but somewhere someone's getting arrested for being brown in downtown. Someone's getting beat to a pulp by Billy Clubs in a back alley for being brown in downtown. Someone's getting shot for being brown in downtown. And everywhere, 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 that's us going down for being brown in downtown.
Grito Serpentino, Trece Cholos. You're tuned to Free Radio, and this is Bathrop's Beer's Broadsides, as I mentioned before. For the next 2 hours, stay with us if you're interested in contributing to or listening to conversation, interviews, chatter, and ranting about civil rights and the absence thereof locally, as well as perhaps a few national implications or international reverberations or causes and consequences. I'm Robert Norris. This is called Bathrop's Piers Broadsides. If you want to call in, you can. The phone number here is 831-427-3772. There is also a chat room, pagesincolor.com, which I really promise to check at least once every hour. Actually, no, I will check it more frequently if I actually see somebody come online. That's go to pagesincolor, small letters, one word, .com. You can also check archived editions of this show, I think only through mid-September at the moment, but hopefully that will be updated soon, on the revitalized, or at least revivified, Huff website. Huff is Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, civil rights organization which includes housed and homeless people. It meets every Wednesday, 8:30 at the county building, between the county building and the courts in the atrium, kind of the breeze through the coffee cart, the right area, right before you hit the metal detectors. That's where we are, 8:30 in the morning on Wednesday. If you want to check us out, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, which is a voicemail, but I'll get back to you if you've got some way of getting being gotten back to through. So I was really interested in that last Sprouts bit, Sprouts, the previous show, right before this one, talking about Minneapolis and homeless camping run by homeless campers. So I quickly went to the web to see if there was actually anything specific I could pass on to you, because I hadn't heard about this, or maybe I had only very vaguely. Don't have a lot of information, so while I do some scrounging around, I'm going to play some interviews, and maybe I'll have some more information. We're also hoping to have a few, or actually expecting to have a few, memorials to Abdul Hassan, the African-American local activist, three-time city council candidate who died several weeks ago, and there was a memorial for him at the Vets Hall on Sunday. It lasted quite a while. It was quite an affair, drums and sage and a feast, and I think Hassan would have been proud. We'll be talking more about him when we get callers who want to remember him. We may get a caller from as far away as Missouri. Jane Immler, Calamity Jane Immler, as we used to call her, has been informed that we're going to be doing this. And actually, we're doing it because Johnny Dredd, also known as John Hamilton, another homeless activist, African-American, is very intent on having something to say about Abdul Hassan. And so for some of you, that name may be a mysterious name. You may not ever have heard of him, but he was a man who stood up for the rights of homeless people to be free from harassment. And he did so in a very public way, particularly vulnerable because of the color of his skin, an African-American in an Anglo community, a wealthy Anglo community, actually. And he wasn't the richest guy in the world. So we'll be talking about that later, probably. But now, a few interviews.
We're down here at Safe Event number
88.
88. What a lucky number. It's the Society of Artistic Freedom and Expression, also known as the Street Performers Against Foolish Enforcement. And playing the guitar is the Sometimes Hungry Breakfast.
No, no, no. They either turn to stuffing
or do turtles in the oven.
Turtles in the oven. An old...
Sounds like I got overbaked there. A little problem with the tape. I'm not sure. Ooh, the machine is eating up my tape. Not good. I'm going to have to work on this one. Well, while I do, I have to do a speedy recovery here. I must have a tape number two around here somewhere. And I think I do. Lots has been happening. I've actually been able to corral some more union folks to continue the conversation that we had on Sunday, debate between Scott Graham and Paul Marcel and Sampson on the strike, the Metro driver's strike. Before we get to that, here's a little of this. Stay tuned.
Okay, it's September 30th. I'm outside the Cinema 9 Theater, about 11:20, talking with...
Daniel.
Daniel, you have quite a tale to tell. What happened to you?
Well, wanting to be here in Santa Cruz and be amongst, some more conscious different peoples around here. I moved here some time ago, trying to find a place, but found it to be really expensive here, so I didn't really have anywhere to stay. And I found out that I could sleep in the forest, but I also found out that it was illegal, that there's nowhere that you can sleep here in Santa Cruz. You couldn't even sleep at the beaches, and there was just no homeless shelters for people to go into, so I had to sleep in the forest. And in my stays in the forest, I know that some different peoples, they might have trashed the forest that I've seen, but there were some people who are also respecting it and trying to, keep it clean, So I stayed there for some time, and then I got busted one day when a big battalion of police went going through the forest, and they found us and gave us tickets. Well, I wasn't able to pay the ticket.
How long ago was that?
That was about a year ago. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to pay the ticket then, and I had to leave for some time and go on my travels in different places in order to survive. But when I came back here again in order to try to get myself established again, I found that, again, I was into the same situation. I didn't have a place to stay. I couldn't afford a high rent here or find a place or find a job, all working together in one magical, spontaneous, you know, way without support from other people. It's kind of hard sometimes.
So you again slept out in the forest?
Yeah, and then the first day that I did it was the first day that in the morning I got busted again.
Same ranger or?
No, different people. And this time, it's kind of interesting. They have a new thing that they're doing. They're bringing around a social worker with them. So when they come up to you, the social worker can offer any kinds of services of the county to the, you know, potential homeless people, houseless people. So anyways.
What did she offer you?
You know, any kinds of assistance in any ways that...
Did she offer you a place to stay?
She didn't give specific, only gave me her card and said we could meet up later. So, altogether, I guess you go to court, you get dealt with, then you have to do your community service, but your community service costs money. And it also costs hours, and while you're doing those hours, where are you staying, what are you eating, you know, how are you able to survive, you know.
Say regarding, the, I guess, these at least two tickets, have you had more than two or just those two?
Just those.
You've been going to court, are you been actually, the fines have been, you're saying doubling every 90 days?
Every 21 days. I don't know how many times it goes over. I know at least just in the very beginning, it first 21 days it doubles.
Who told you that?
That's the people who set up the community service.
Oh, interesting. I've never heard that before. Maybe so. And so how many days since the fine began its original course?
It's been like a month. I originally had the money, but then my car broke down.
How much was the money?
It went from 90 to 180 in 21 days. And then now it's been like...
In lieu of community service? Or?
Yeah. So... I'm sure everything will work out. I'm going to go into court and see if they will understand my story and everything. But it would just be nice to understand that giving homeless people tickets for hours that they have to work for, paying for those hours is not maybe a very good solution for people who are already destitute and don't have money.
We've been talking with...
Daniel.
Thank
you. And now it's back to SAFE, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression. If others out there have had experiences, particularly recently, about the problems with surviving out of doors or being to live with some dignity or at least being free from harassment by authorities, such as the kind that Daniel describes, please call in, 427-3772. There is still on the back burner. It isn't on the front burner by any means, but there is continued discussion of a lawsuit, which when combined with political activity, that is to say demonstrations and lobbying of city council, might produce some meaningful changes. It's always a struggle. It's been a struggle in the decades in the past, but such a clear human rights violation as the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, which makes it illegal, to sleep, S-L-E-E-P, sleep, not litter, not throw needles on the ground, not crap in the street, but sleep, between the hours of 11 p.m. and 8:30 a.m. on all, I underline all, public property in Santa Cruz, puts people in a very vulnerable position where they do not have the power to get together and protect each other as they do or have done in other places. For instance, I've been able to find the Minneapolis reference that Sprout was speaking about, the folks from the previous show, but looking at the Seattle Weekly from a year ago, I find an article called Camping Commonalities, Seattle's Tent Cities for the Homeless Are Not Unique, Nor Are the Challenges. It's by Kimberly Peterson. I'm going to read a little bit of it. The Woodinville Alliance Church is debating whether to be the next host of suburban Tent City 4, which now calls Bothell home but still faces regulatory hurdles there. Tent City 3, meanwhile, is quietly relocating to St. Joseph's Church on Seattle's Capitol Hill. The area's two roving camps for the homeless, typically moving every 3 months, consistently have managed to find new ground over the years, despite some angry residents, lawsuits, nervous politicians. Determining what ground to call home next is an ongoing challenge, though, for the volunteers and residents, certainly, but also for the communities that are reminded of the homeless problem with every move. Seattle is not alone in addressing homelessness with tent cities. Other places have similarly struggled with how to calm nearby residents down, find a satisfactory level of regulation and infrastructure to accommodate homeless campers, of course, but not Santa Cruz, at least not recently. Some tent cities have seen success, others have failed, and others have struggled eventually to be accepted. Four U.S. cities have faced the same issues challenging Seattle's tent cities 3 and 4. They are Aurora, Illinois. Hesed House is a particularly good comparison to suburban Seattle's Tent City 4 because the tent city there started almost 20 years ago as a ministry on church grounds and, like Tent City 4, is in close proximity to residential areas. During its humble beginnings, the camp moved each night to a different church, round robin style. In 1985, the city of Aurora leased a piece of public land on the outskirts of the city to establish the shelter in a permanent location, according to Sister Rose Marie Loretson, executive director of Hesed House. Hesed House, H-E-S-E-D, House, eventually came to be accepted by residents. Over time, when their worst fears weren't realized they were people who were poor but not necessarily bad neighbors, Lorenzen said. They have met their neighbors. People fear most what they don't know. Lorenzen says the support and cooperation of various churches were key, as was the eventual cooperation of elected officials, who at first were a little bit uneasy, but so many of their constituents are volunteering at the shelter, it changes things. Interesting. Los Angeles, 1993, homeless activist Ted Hayes founded Dome Village with the help of a $250,000 grant. Located in downtown L.A., Dome Village consists of 20 dome structures. I've actually been there myself. Some for living, some for cooking, even one for teaching residents computer skills. Like Seattle's tent cities, families are allowed to stay together, which often is not the case at traditional shelters. Most facilities are segregated, so when residents graduate to society and there are kids and dogs and blacks and everything else, they fail, says Ted Hayes. Los Angeles has strict building codes and very partisan politics, Hayes says, and people told him he'd never see a program like Dome Village work in his lifetime. We've had to earn it every step of the way, he says. We made everybody mad at us. It was just being persistent and consistent that led to success. I've talked about Dome Village on the air, but not for 3 or 4 years. Actually, I visited Dome Village in 2000 when the Democrats held their national coronation there, and then they crowned, the losing candidate in 2000. So unmemorable. I guess it was the vice president under Clinton, our environmental man. Anyway, Dignity Village, I found to be a Republican Party founded corporate deal, but you know, it did provide some shelter for homeless people. It was managed by nominally homeless people like Ted Hayes. I don't think there was much of a Democratic structure there, but they also did some marching, urging meaningful activity to deal with problems the poor face to the convention. And then they were attacked by the police. Ted Hayes' response was to support the police and their attack on him. It was a strange situation, but Ted's been a strange guy anyway. But that is a tent village, certainly of a kind, though the tents are pretty upscale at Dome Village. In Portland, another successful experiment, which actually came down and visited us here in Santa Cruz in 2002 when Thomas Levitt hosted a sleeping band summit here, and I guess it was April or May of 2002, and different tent cities and homeless communities, self-run homeless communities, sent representatives, including Tent City 3 in Seattle, Dignity Village, Santa Cruz's own brief tent city, Camp Paradise, and Isla Vista's Home Sweet Homeless. Actually, what was it called? had another name. But they all brought, sent reps, as did organizations from state civil rights groups for the homeless, and it was quite a shindig. Dignity Village was well represented, and again, I'll read what it says about them. Dignity Village was founded in 2000, and initially Portland's tent city had problems similar to Seattle's, according to Jack Tafari, a frequent spokesperson for the village. The tent city was given 60 days to find a new site after a community meeting in which angry residents called for a relocation. Finally, the city offered to lease a site on the outskirts of Portland between a prison and a warehouse, and the lease has been extended several times. Marshall Runkle, assistant to Portland City Council member Eric Sten, says the location on unused land outside the city with few immediate neighbors has helped Dignity Village succeed. It's rational to have concerns about an experimental homeless camp, he says. In the 2 years since Dignity Village moved in, crime in the area has been consistently lower. Our impact on the neighborhood is not only negligible in any negative sense, it's been good, says Tafari. There's a fence around the village and a guarded entrance. Like Seattle's tent cities, violence, drugs, and alcohol are not tolerated, and the village is not government-funded. Dignity Village is its own nonprofit organization, while Seattle's tent cities are under an umbrella organization, Share/Wheel. Denver. When Dallas Malerby, a graduate student of the University of Colorado, heard that the mayor of Denver was creating a commission to end homelessness, he and other advocates for the homeless began drawing up a plan for an officially sanctioned tent city. They researched the needs of Denver's homeless population, addressed concerns of politicians and citizens, and cited examples in other cities. The result was a 39-page report. The bottom line is that we want a safe, legal place for people to be outside, says Malerby. However, on May 10th, that's probably May 10th, 2004, the Denver Commission to End Homelessness voted overwhelmingly against the proposal. One of the concerns was the safety of women and children, says Deborah Ortega, executive director of the commission. The other issue is that Colorado has such frigid temperatures compared to other cities. The commission is looking at long-term solutions as well as more funding from the state for housing vouchers and increased capacity at a conventional shelter. Ortega concedes that the city does not have enough shelter for more than 9,000 homeless people in Denver, although an interfaith group has been trying to fill the need. Ortega holds out little hope of a tent city succeeding in Denver. The city charter has to change, city ordinances will have to change, and the political will has to be there. She says, I think it would be very hard if they tried again. Of course, they could just set one up and embarrass them all to death, which has been successful in other places like Portland, Oregon. The tent cities that have succeeded all initially had problems with location. In Illinois, Hesed House moved every night. Dome Village in Los Angeles is the second tent city organized by Hayes after the first was bulldozed by the city. Even Dignity Village in Portland, which has become something of a national model, moved around until it found its current site. In Portland and Illinois, politicians willing to work with activists have been key, according to this writer. Community involvement in working to find the area around a tent city safe, or working to make it safe and clean, has proven to be important in assuring concerned residents. Dignity Village leads tours of school children and community groups through the camp to raise awareness. That's happening in Seattle, too. In Illinois, Hesed House enlists the help of Aurora residents who volunteer time. They get to know residents and their stories. Strict rules are enforced in all of the successful tent cities. Toronto had a tent city, but it was bulldozed because of rampant drug use. I might say also rampant bigotry by the authorities. Drug use or overcrowding has led to the breakup of tent cities from Vancouver, B.C. to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. There is a wide agreement among advocates that tent cities are not the real solution, only a short-term one for a serious problem that needs a permanent answer. These are substandard living conditions, says Hayes, and we cannot let this become the new standard, says Runkle of Portland's seemingly successful example. This is a new low. Nobody should mistake this for a victory. True enough, and indeed, if it were proposed as an alternative to affordable housing, I would say horseshit. But in Santa Cruz, what they use is the myth of affordable housing to criminalize people who sleep and to break up encampments that people get together in for safety. Similar argument, well, drug use was one of the arguments used to close down the Coral Street open-air shelter, Santa Cruz's own tent city, which lasted for, well, it was a summer thing for two or three summers and on the so-called Back 40, which is now being covered up by Community House, a program at the corner of Highway 1 and Highway 9. But as I've always said, and as I think has been recognized by knowledgeable homeless activists, the Coral Street open-air shelter, which allowed people to have their tents up during the day in its final year, due to organizing by the tenants, by the displaced urban residents or the homeless, as some call them, was successful, except it was underfunded by the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and it was attacked by Rotkin and then-Mayor Kennedy. Actually, then-Mayor Rotkin and Councilmember Kennedy. We have a caller. Let's see who's on the line here. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Can you hear me?
Robert, there's been a dead air for the last 10 minutes.
Can you hear me?
On the phone, but I can't. There's nothing broadcasting.
Oh, really?
For the last 10 minutes.
Huh. Interesting. Okay. Thank you.
Bye.
Wow. Wow. Well, we have apparently a dead signal here, which may be going out on the Internet, but is not broadcasting. What a bummer. Well, I hate to hear that. What I'm going to do then is play a bit more of Wednesday night's shindig in front of New Leaf Market, where musicians get together and reclaim public spaces and have a good time. Safe Event 88, which you heard a bit of, and a bit of Turtles in the Oven. And if nobody's listening to this, hopefully you'll be able to hear it online as an archive while I try to fix things up.
Turtles in the Oven, an old favorite from breakfast. This is also a birthday celebration for at least two SAFE members, Uncle Dennis and Valerie C. Valerie, how do you feel getting older and older? Is your songbook growing?
Well, you know, it's not really me that's getting old, it's my body.
This is a spiritual perspective.
It's the true perspective, really, but, you know, whatever.
Have you been born again?
No, I'm just not my body.
I see. Well, I won't comment any further, but dare I say it, happy birthday. And for your mom, happy birthing day.
Thank you very much.
Don't compare to turtles in the oven. Turtles in the oven, Betty. Turtles in the oven. I like taking them out to Utah. They like playing chess with my grandpa.
Queen five and king four.
He likes rubbing his toes in coleslaw.
But there's turtles in the oven.
Wow, it's turtles in the oven. Dennis, your 48th birthday is coming up.
Sooner than we think, Robert.
What's going to be happening on that birthday? Are you? I know that's tomorrow, right? That's actually today. Of course,
tomorrow,
it's the 5th. Tomorrow is October 6th.
October 6th is my birth anniversary. That's right.
And it's also the day when the Metro strikers are going to be having a big shindig at 6:00 in the evening. Are you going to be combining a birthday celebration with a support of La Huelga?
Where will the union event be held?
No, that's a very good question. Indie Media, I believe, said it's something like. I will inform you at a future point. In fact, when this is being played, it'll be happening even as we speak.
Who was that man? Who was that masked man?
Who knows? I know there's fire engines up the street, blocking the street going into the building above the Taqueria Vallarta. Is that part of your doing?
They do this from time to time just so that the people in the cars can't see our honk if you want out of Iraq sign, which isn't here today anyway. That's too bad.
It disappeared already. Now
here comes the fire engine now.
Here's a sign that somebody put up. A world can't wait. Drive out the Bush regime. Don't go to work. Walk out of school. Convergence, November 2nd, 2005.
It was I, Robert. It's the same thing I was telling you about on your radio show two Sundays ago. Remember the report on the San Francisco demonstration? I said I had allied myself with the chartreuse folks. That's these guys.
It's a green sign.
Yes, it is. The T-shirts and bumper stinkers that they profess and flout are... Or is it flunk?
Flunk. It's flunk. One of the flunk. Two. I know that for damn sure. Now, whatever you want to do, I want to make sure you don't do anything like this.
Chartreuse. Good. Thank you. I had to take that down because I was told that wasn't quite accorded. But I want to be certainly in accord
with all laws and
because they told me to be that way for the next 3 years.
That's for sure. So what was the outcome? You took probation or some sort?
That was from something in San Francisco, not here in San Francisco. That was another thing that I was not. I didn't have time to defend myself. I had to get out of jail. And I had to get down to Los Angeles.
One of your drunken stupors again?
Well, it wasn't a stupor, actually. Not totally. I was, in a way, it was. I guess it was. But I didn't get to defend myself because I had to get out of jail. They wouldn't let me out of jail without a trial.
Those who wish to see you in a drunken stupor, you'll be there tomorrow at October six that your favorite watering hole?
It's not my favorite, but it's everybody else's favorite. It's Rob Bresny's favorite. Rob, okay, for those of you who care, yes, I'm inviting...
What's the name of the place?
Well, if you know me.
If I know you.
I don't want just a bunch of random strangers coming in. You know, if you want to come and buy me a beer, that's fine, and you can drink it. Because I can't drink all the beers that people are going to try to buy me tomorrow.
We're not even going to get into this any further, but if you wish to announce the place...
You know what a catalyst is? It's a little pebble that you throw into stone soup to make everybody else bring their... carrots, onions, parsnips, parsley, everything. You know, that's what a catalyst is. It's a stone in a stone soup. That's what it is.
And I want to ask whether you're stoned or not.
Residually, perhaps. Maybe, possibly. Tal vez, quizás. You're trying to get away from me, aren't you?
No, I'm moving over to Betsy because I'm going to hit on her again. Betsy, any comments? Betsy remains a serene but mobile silence here. And, Gardener Mike, what's happening with you?
What? Nothing. What's going on?
Well, you seem pretty merry tonight. What are you so cheery about?
Just having a good time, man.
any observations perhaps to bring us down or lift us up?
The weather is good. I give you the forecast.
That's true. It looks we have a new moon, a slice of a new moon coming our way.
Well, don't you know that?
And trees are shedding its leaves.
And we have a band of singers in a circle.
Ways. We are moving on. We are slowing down. We are moving faster. We are in a transitional mode of hibernation in our times.
And Iraqis are dying at an extraordinarily accelerated rate. But, hey, it's business as usual in downtown Santa Cruz.
Hey.
Talking with Hot Rod, who, as you may have heard earlier, had recently experienced a severe assault yesterday. He's thinking of leaving town, but he also has some court problems. What's the court scene like, Hot Rod?
By the 25th, I got to get evaluated by the Veterans Administration so that they realize it's not my problem being a survivor on the street with attempted murders against me, that I'm a victim of our circumstance, and the police don't care.
Did you attempt to report this to the police?
Yeah, the police know and seen me all bloody and took pictures.
Which officer took
I don't know. He didn't say. They loaded me in the ambulance after I got kicked in the face and bloody and fractured nose.
And indeed, there are marks on your nose and on your above your forehead.
On my ear, too. Yeah, I could have been murdered. The way the vicious.
What was the diagnosis? That you went to Dominican?
They don't really help. My diabetes was 350 sugar, so they immediately insisted that I go with the ambulance because I was in too bad a shape. And to make a long story short, I can't stay in town. I don't want to be taken wrong again by these punk, gutter punk people that hang out in front of borders or the park of the city by the county building or by the evening post office is where they're going now to do whatever they do, and I can't go to a veterans meeting tonight because they're in that local area.
And they walk you down there?
Oh, and you're no protection. They'll just put your lights out too. Maybe not. No, but why be with me?
Okay, you want to go to a veterans meeting?
That's what I'm trying to say. It's scary to just.
Anyway, so it's not looking good, eh?
Me well, any good. But I'm glad they're at least gone that way that I realize I'm a little better off.
How do you like the SAFE event tonight?
The SAFE meeting? They're same as the usual. The local entertainment doesn't, nothing's different. I'm trying to promote peace and what have
you. Oh, you have street spirit in your hands. Are you getting rid of any of those? Selling any of those?
No, not a one yet. But, you know, even if somebody really is intentional that they look, is you just be better off just making sure that they're the right one person for the free paper. I hardly ever give out a free paper because they're worth a dollar, just, you know, to value, except to somebody really, through the spirit, you know, will do something with it.
Well, let us know if anything that happens tonight, and stay close to safe. Stay safe. Now the report from Roger. What's happening, Roger?
Winter is coming. Doesn't look like it yet, but winter is coming. The previous winter, Robert Wagner froze to death across from the city hall, and there were other hardships faced by people that were of moderate or lesser means. The rains come. They rained a long time the previous winter. People had hardships. In general, it's bad for their health. People are going to get minor cases of pneumonia and other health ailments. It's not good. I wish I had a better street report, but the report from the street right now, just to be accurate, and it's October 5th, winter's coming. I urge everybody to get ready for it, but I mean, you know, some are less able.
It's pretty nice weather tonight, though.
Yeah, it's pretty nice tonight, which I mean, but I'm saying.
Yeah, I hear you, winter.
You're in it year round.
Now, are you outside there, Roger?
By most people's definitions, yeah.
I would say so.
Yeah, okay, I live outside, yeah.
I've been there.
Any reports on tickets, assaults, or any other weird
things? Not for me. That I pedal 10 miles out of town to be so far. Nobody...
I'm saying
the average person doesn't go to that elaborate means. And I've heard people grumbling they got tickets, and I believe it. And I was reading today in a newspaper or somewhere, the mayor's sticking with it's a $90 fine. If you sleep and can't afford a hotel room, we charge you $90 for not affording it.
Weird and crazy. Thank you, Roger.
You're welcome.
What I wanted to say was...
And a few more words from Uncle Dennis.
Some of you may remember that last year when we had that death on a bench in City Hall Courtyard, I wrote the lyrics to what will be a song, and I'm going to do my best to fit that to music before the next go-round.
Missing bench.
Of January. Yeah, it was the song of the unknown homeless person, basically. I think that's what it was called. You remember that?
Yeah.
I had a copy of it there during the vigil at the City Hall the next night. It would have been a Tuesday night, I believe. Well, no, it would have been Monday night because he was discovered on a Monday morning, I believe, after a week.
Robert Wagner.
Yeah. That's all I want to say, that those lyrics are being put to music as soon as I can.
Cool. Bring them to us.
And we'll be performed on the Berry sidewalk.
Excellent.
Excellent.
And that, of course, is from last night's Safe Shindig Rally feed, sing-along, you name it. As I understand it, we are still not broadcasting, but we are streaming for those of you who are fortunate enough to have a computer or who are listening to this show in the archives later, assuming it makes it to the archives. Hopefully it will. Again, the archives are at huffsantacruz.org, which... presumably, anybody who's listening to the show knows, but again, I guess some folks may be hearing it on a computer and not know where it's archived, but that's where it's archived. Huff Santa Cruz, H-U-F-F Santa Cruz, all one word, all small letters, .org. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, and you are maybe listening to us on an archive or maybe on the internet at freakradio.org. Or maybe the transmitter suddenly came back and you can hear us on the air. And unfortunately, that doesn't seem to be the case. So I'm going to continue anyway because time is time. It's not really money here, but it is time, which is perhaps even more valuable than money. There is a Metro bus drivers rally happening down at the Metro Center right now. It started half an hour ago. My apologies for not mentioning it earlier for those of you who are listening on the internet. You want to go down there and support the bus drivers, you can. You can also show up tomorrow when there's going to be a march on Friday starting at 4 o'clock up on the UCSC campus at the base of the campus, marching downtown to the Metro Center for another rally at 5 o'clock. And I believe there's going to be a rally on Sunday as well from Watsonville. And that one, I actually got some of the details on, I have them on tape, and I may be playing those details later, I don't know if that one is actually mentioned on Indie Media, but I'm going to take a look here. And I don't see it, but I'm pretty sure that I know it's happening because I talked to bus drivers about it, and that is, in fact, the case. On Sunday, there's going to be people will gather at the Watsonville Metro, and they will then, I guess, get some transportation to Freedom and walk from Freedom to Santa Cruz, as I understand it, the plan. Um, So check that out, and we're going to be hearing some stuff from United Transportation Union and folks from the drivers, maybe from you, the public. We have a caller calling in. Hi there, caller. You're on the net, I suppose. I mean, I hope. Hello? Hello? Are you there? Let's see here. Okay, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Let me turn down the... let me turn down the computer.
Okay, you weren't able to hear the radio, but you could hear the computer. Excellent.
Okay, there. All right. I heard the line come on, and I didn't know I was on the air, so pardon me.
No, that's fine. I think you, just a little technical tutah here in the studio. But, hey, what's cooking? What can we do for you?
Well, I do listen to your station a lot, and I listen to it from Turlock, California. I find it a fascinating and wonderful source. So I thought to call and give you some inspiration and tell you that people are listening, and I'm not in the local area, obviously, your micro power, and I think that's great. So this is just a pat on the back to say good job and thank you.
Well, caller, before you go, because I like those pats, I got to tell you.
Pardon me, I've got a train going by.